so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, it is good to be back.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not blaming you. I just feel like it's, you know, and this is one of those things that if you're listening, hopefully you haven't noticed too much, but between, like, illnesses and scheduling stuff, it's been a while since we've just been able to do a podcast in our normal spots, and here we are today.
That's true. That's a good point. Even though we have done the most of the last 5 weeks, it's been... It has been a battle.
And we're going to go for a quick podcast today, which means that you're probably getting an hour and 30 minutes from us. That's what seems to happen whenever we try to go fast.
Yep.
All right. On the docket for today's toy department, Oscar nominations are out. So we're going to run through that and some recent movies that we've seen, because we've been trying to make sure we have done our due Oscar diligence. So we'll talk about movies, some interesting things happening in TV, including one of our favorite sitcoms just blowing stuff up. We'll get to that. But I wanted to start with some breaking news, which I'm sure won't be breaking news by the time you heard it. But Brett Musburger announced his retirement today. Yeah. And it was one of those things for me. It's part of the reason why I'm here doing stuff in media today, and certainly why I'm sitting around here talking about sports, is because I wanted to be Brent Musburger. You know, like, he was the formative TV sports voice of my childhood, and the fact that he is still on television and still really good, in my opinion.
Yeah, still throwing a fastball, no question.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, is he, you know, if he was a pitcher, he's that guy that used to throw 98 and now he throws, you know, 90-91 and is a little craftier, but man, he's still throwing 90-91 at age 77. Yeah. You know,
no, he's clearly a major leaguer still.
Yeah. And you know, it's a sudden retirement. He's going away January 31st.
But you know what? I want to give him credit for that. I think, like, it's annoying enough when an athlete does a farewell tour. I don't need a farewell tour from Brent Musburger.
Interesting.
I like knowing that I know his final broadcast so I can make sure I watch it. You know, I like that he is announcing it with, you know, what, a week? We got about a week to process and deal with it. And that's enough, I think. He's an announcer. He's not supposed to be the story. And I think it's in keeping with the classy way he conducted his whole career that he is giving us a week to handle this news.
It's interesting. And, you know, I think that sort of compares and contrasts with the broadcaster that we, you know, maybe disagree on a little bit. And that, you know, Vern Lundquist kind of took a farewell tour this summer in the SEC, and I really enjoyed that, actually.
I mean, I have no hate for Vern Lundquist. I don't dislike Vern Lundquist. I just don't need that. Yeah. I don't need that. And I think, again, it's not that I would have been upset if we got a year of Brent Musburger farewell tour. It's just not necessary, and I appreciate that he knows it's not necessary.
Yeah, and he went out. Apparently, this is a big part of why this thing is happening suddenly, is he specifically didn't want that. But I think I would have enjoyed the chance to appreciate a guy. I mean, you're talking about a guy, like, the thing about Musburger is, man, he did everything.
Every sport.
Like, in those CBS days, like, he was doing World Series games in the NFL today, and golf, and NBA.
You ready? You ready for the list? This is just for ABC, ESPN, and the SEC Network. He has hosted and or called play-by-play games for the NBA, college football, including 7 BCS championship games, basketball, golf, NASCAR, IndyCar, the 2006 FIFA World Cup, and the Little League World Series from 2000 to 2011.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's just with Disney.
And like I said, that wasn't even I would argue, that was not the busiest period of his career.
Arguably not.
Yeah. I mean, it really is something. And I just, you know, now it seems like an achievement that you got Joe Buck doing, you know, lead on baseball and football. And this guy did that plus basketball and plus NASCAR. Like, who knew?
Right? Right? Here's the CBS list. The NFL Today, NCAA Final Four, Tennis's U.S. Open, the NBA, the Masters, the Belmont Stakes, College World Series, and basketball play-by-play for CBS Radio. The guy literally did everything.
Yeah.
And the moments, I mean, they mentioned Doug Flutie's Hail Mary. They mentioned Villanova's upset in the NCAA tournament over Georgetown. He's one of those guys that quickly ascended to a point where he got great assignments, and so having Brent Musburger on a game you were watching is like part of the excitement because you know it means something.
That was a big deal. And people, too, you know, if you're of a certain age, you might not understand that, like, the NFL Today, that invented the pregame show.
Right.
You know, like, that everything that you see now on Sunday mornings, for better or for worse, springs from that. So, you know, monumental achievement. I mean, would you say the greatest sports television broadcaster of our time? Of all time, really?
Well, yeah. I mean, our time is all time, basically.
Yeah.
He's certainly in the conversation. I mean, in terms of play-by-play guys, who else would you throw? Probably Keith Jackson gets thrown in there.
Yeah, I mean, Keith Jackson, you know, I mean, I guess
he was much more limited from a breadth perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you hear some Jack Buck or maybe some Summerall. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I did love Summerall, but I'm with you, and I'm even a little younger
Costas
than you.
Costas, too. So I think you got to put Costas in the mix.
F Costas. Costas would take a 3-year farewell tour, and that's the problem.
That's probably true. But
Costas is so obsessed with himself that he'll never to me, he'll never be great like Brent Musburger because he's too worried about himself.
I'll grant you all those pomposity points on Costas.
He's very good at his job.
He's very good, and he's the only guy I think that can compete with Musburger in terms of the breadth of moments and sports that he's been around. So.
No, you're probably right about that. And I like to rag on Costas because he bothers me. But, yeah, he's obviously very good. I'd take Brent Musburger over him to call a game 8 days a week, though.
Give me Costas for baseball, but everything else I think you'd take Musburger.
Yeah, all right. Except by the fourth inning, you're like drowning in a sea of Costas' own self-congratulations.
And you have to put – I think we have to put Vin Scully in that mix too, even though he just really the one sport.
Of course. Yeah, you're right.
But so good at it. All right. So while we're ranking guys, this is something that you and I talked about in the break.
Hey, come on. We rank guys constantly. Never stop. But
that's
go ahead.
True. So let's go ahead. I'm curious. You know, both of us are fans of Bomani Jones from ESPN. He made it from around the horn or highly questionable or, I don't know, his writing or whatever. And
he's Bomani's a smart, funny guy.
Yes. Bomani, like everyone at ESPN, has basically been going at it with Atlanta fans on Twitter for the last, I don't know, 3-4 weeks. There seems to be certainly a hesitancy in the national media to crown Matt Ryan, if you will. And it started, you know, when the Matt Ryan for MVP noise got a little bit louder. It still kind of continued through the playoffs, even though a lot of people were like, well, just wait till they collapse in the playoffs. And then when that didn't happen, today Bomani said he had Matt Ryan around 12 among quarterbacks. And he reeled off 10. He's like, here's 10 off the top of my head that I'd rather have. And I'm curious, where do you rank Matt Ryan among today's quarterbacks?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this for 15 minutes. First of all, I think it needs to be said in this conversation that Matt Ryan is the MVP.
Yes.
So functionally, like, if we're ranking what quarterbacks did this year, he's arguably number one, and he's certainly not outside the top four. I mean, that's just a fact. So Bomani can whine about – listen to me taking shots at Bomani.
I know. Bomani who we're can, fans of.
But honest, no, I am. I am a fan. And honestly, Bomani can say whatever he wants.
Right.
And you can I'm not in favor of permanently ranking quarterbacks by their team's success or by one season. So I understand, like, the quarterback rankings are not the MVP rankings.
Right.
But it is worth saying that at this moment, if we were doing a power rankings of quarterbacks, he's not outside the top four. So, and that's a fact. That's not even really up for debate, I don't think.
Right.
So the thing that he's really litigating is, I think, something closer to if you had to pick a quarterback going forward, or if you had to pick a quarterback for next year, would he be one of the top 10? And again, I haven't done the accounting, but I'm quite certain he's in my top 10.
Here are the 10 that he had over Ryan. He said, these are not in order.
Okay.
Cam.
Okay.
Breeze. Luck. Oh, Romo. Eli. Brady. Oh, Rodgers.
Stop. Once he put Eli on the list, it's not a valid list.
Wait, you know who else is on this list? Phil Rivers is on that list.
Yeah, I mean, at least Phil Rivers has at some point in his career done things as a quarterback that make you think he has elite quarterback abilities. Eli Manning is just, like, honestly, the list is invalid as soon as you mention Eli Manning. comparing Eli Manning to Matt Ryan is beyond absurd.
I do not understand it. The only way you do that is, well, Super Bowls. Like, that's... Which is kind of a QB.
That's the whole point.
Right.
That's the whole point of his argument, is that that's not the way to do it.
Right, because he's an anti, like, wins guy, yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm really disappointed. I don't know what else to say about that. Yeah. He's just wrong. Eli Manning can't carry Matt Ryan's shoes to the stadium.
Yeah. If you've listened to this podcast at all, you know I'm a Falcons fan, so I'm in the tank.
Here's what I would say. Since I'm not a Falcons fan, I'm just going to cut you off.
Okay.
Right. If I'm picking a quarterback for next year, all right, then I think, was Aaron Rodgers on that list?
Yes, Aaron, you cut me off before I got to Rodgers, because
okay, cool.
he came right after, he came two spots after Eli, so.
If I'm picking a, he said not in order. Still, I don't know how you even think of Eli before you write down Aaron Rodgers, but anyway. If I'm picking a quarterback for next year, I think Rodgers and Brady are a cut above.
Talking about it's just next year only.
Just next year. Because if we're building for the future, it's a different conversation.
Agreed.
I think you got to talk about guys like Derek Carr.
Right.
But
I think you could talk about Derek Carr in next year's conversation too, honestly. Certainly ahead of Eli.
You can.
Yeah.
But for next year, I'm taking Brady and Rodgers and Ryan above Carr. For the future, Derek Carr is maybe my number one pick. I mean, top two, top three, right in there.
Yeah, I mean, who would you take above Ryan next year? Like, take
that's
Brady.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, take Brady and Rodgers out of it. That's because obviously they're obvious. But after that,
I think Matt Ryan is right in the group with Russell Wilson and maybe Ben Roethlisberger if he's playing and healthy, and Andrew Luck. There's a group of guys.
I have Breeze in that group. I'd rather have Breeze than any of those guys that you mentioned, except maybe Ryan.
I was going to add Breeze. Yeah. Again, if we're just talking about next year, he's in that conversation as well. But that's about it. That's about it right there. It's about Breeze, Luck, Ryan, and probably Cam is right in there too.
You don't have Russell Wilson in that group? Just curious.
Yeah, I did. I said him the first time.
Okay.
I don't have everything. I don't have a list in front of me, so I'm doing it off the top of my head.
But
there's a group of four or five guys below the top two, and Matt Ryan's in it.
Yeah, it's six or seven at worst to me.
I would agree.
And what I was going to say is, as a Falcons fan, if you're asking me, like, hey, you have a chance to win your Super Bowl, yes, do I want Tom Brady? Nine times out of ten, of course I do. Like, over the span of a career, how could you not? He's Tom Brady.
But for this game,
in 2 weeks, I feel like my team might have the better quarterback. For this one game in 2 weeks, where we're at right now, Matt Ryan's been playing better than Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's not a totally fair comparison, but you're right.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not totally apples to apples, but if you want to take all of 2016 and, yep. you know, the 2017 playoffs,
yep.
it's hard to say that Matt Ryan is not quarterbacking better than Tom Brady right now at this moment. Now, I think the line is thin.
I would argue that Matt Ryan's play in the playoffs in particular, but really the whole season, has essentially been unimpeachable.
Yeah, I would.
He has done nothing other than exactly what he needs to do.
Yes. quite well. It's hard to ask for much more. I mean, yeah, everybody was talking about Aaron Rodgers coming into that game. And he outplayed him.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully so, because Aaron Rodgers is dealing, and Aaron Rodgers had nothing around him. And look, I'll take Aaron Rodgers over Matt Ryan 10 times out of 10. But you're right. One guy played a better game.
Yeah, I would also argue, I mean,
going to the Super Bowl.
I think people overlooked, if you looked at Matt Ryan's numbers over that same 8-game run the table stretch Rodgers, they were almost the same.
Yeah. I don't think people overlooked, they looked at the rest of the team.
So, and he lost one game in that span where Rodgers ran the table. You know,
again,
so,
I don't think anyone is overlooking Matt Ryan. That's why I think he's the consensus MVP, is he not? Like, whatever Bomani says, I don't think there's any argument for anyone besides Matt Ryan as MVP of the NFL this year.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get why people make an argument for Rodgers. I don't totally – like, the argument for Tom Brady is mostly, like, he's Tom Brady and he's the best player.
Yeah, that's not true. He's wrong.
It's kind of the LeBron argument, like LeBron should be MVP argument every year.
Well, but if that was – no, I disagree with that. I think the LeBron argument is the Aaron Rodgers argument.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the NFL, period.
Oh, I'd rather have Brady than Rodgers.
That's insane. I'm not we can't get into this. I don't have time to do this.
All right, maybe we'll do that Super Bowl talk.
Super Bowl week. Yeah, we could do that next week maybe, but when you say that, you're doing the Super Bowl thing. You're counting Super Bowls when you do that. That's it. Aaron Rodgers does things that Tom Brady can't dream of, period, end of story.
Yeah, sure. They're different QBs. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, one's better.
All right. Let's get into that next week. How's that?
Okay.
Sure. And I have, you know, I'm not sliding Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is amazing. All right. So should we move on to, you want to do movies or TV first?
Maybe we do TV first.
All right, let's jump into The Good Place, which is a show that we have talked about before, recommended before, and, you know, kind of quietly while we've been off on other things, has really developed over the course of this freshman season.
I feel like the last time we talked about it, we were both enjoying it, but we weren't totally sure if it was like a keeper.
Yes, agreed.
Is that fair?
And I think even then we said, like, hey, you know, this is a show from the creator of Parks and Recreation. That show needed, you know, a season and a half to kind of find itself before it got really great. And we're hoping this one will be the same. And that's kind of the way it's been.
I mean, certainly signs pointing in the right direction. I just thought the finale was both smart and funny, but also like audacious, you know.
I think we should go.
I don't know if we're going to totally spoil it.
Yeah, let's just spoil it because it's hard to talk about otherwise. I think so.
Okay.
Here's your spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert, because you are not going to want to hear what happens in the end if you're still going to watch this series. But basically, they subvert the entire first season in the season finale, and they flip everything we thought we knew on its head.
Yeah, essentially that we thought they were in The Good Place, which, you know, was sort of the heaven equivalent of this universe. It turns out they've been in the hell equivalent the whole time.
Right. And that the this version of hell is making people think that they're in heaven, but that nothing quite works the way they would want it to in heaven.
Right.
And so they're constantly being driven crazy by each other and their circumstances.
So, and then the show, you know, their memories are sort of wiped. And at the, you know, you realize they're going to start the same process all over again as they work to refine it.
And a couple of things about this are delightful. First of all, again, sort of the audacity of saying they wiped the blackboard clean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, it's like we did this whole first season, and now we got to start from scratch again next year, which is brave in a way, right? I mean, it's television. Like, it's not war.
It's a profile of courage, really.
It's the red badge of courage, if you will. But they it is, in a way, for a TV show that, you know, anytime you're a sitcom on a network, like, you got to get ratings to stay alive.
Yep.
So it is a little bit audacious. And also, I just think a heel turn from Ted Danson is so wonderful, man.
Yeah.
That guy is brilliant. I love him. I love him.
I can't wait to, have him the opportunity to sort of showcase and kind of play off that a little bit in season two. If you know Mike Shore, who's the creator of the show at all, you know, he's maybe the world's biggest Cheers fan. So he has that reverence for Ted Danson, and it's unsurprising that, you know, he's going to give him kind of this opportunity. And the other thing I would say about Mike Shore shows that are really great is, you know, he's very focused on the relationships between characters and the deepening of these sort of bonds and deepening of these characters as we go along. And so, you know, really the show is sort of set up for him now to be able to kind of play with that every season and sort of, you know, reestablish these relationships every season as these people sort of forget each other. Although, you know, as a plot point, you know, the very end, there's a new guy who kind of pops up in, in the good place. Are we going to see a whole bunch of new characters next season? Are they resetting it, or are the same four people coming back as the mains? I couldn't quite tell if that was going to be the case. Do you know the answer to that?
I don't know the answer, but it's an interesting question. I certainly hope the same, because I actually think that, I mean, obviously Kristen Bell and Ted Danson are locked in.
Right.
But I thought the guy who played Chidi was a lot of fun.
Me too.
I thought he really nailed that part, and Tahani as well. Like, I really enjoyed the relationships that were developing, and I think, I hope what's happening is just now we get those same relationships with a weird sense of dramatic irony, because we know more than the characters know about themselves and each other. Dramatic irony is one of my favorite literary conventions, so yeah. I'm very excited.
And I think it'll be kind of, yeah, it'll be fun to know that, you know, everyone who's not the main character in this world is a person who is in on the joke and trying to mess with them, which I think will be,
right.
Will be delightful.
Exactly. So, it opens so many doors for a second season and adds, because part of our concern, I think, when we weren't sure about whether this was a keeper, part of our concern was like, how far does this gag go of heaven being a goofy place that isn't quite working out, you know, and having interlopers in it.
Yeah.
There's so much more to play with now from a emotional standpoint and just like plot lines. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too that there's a network sitcom, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that I'm excited to watch. Although, you know, I will say, and I've told people this, I feel like almost like I'm coming out of the closet on this, but like, Black-ish is a damn good show, and people should watch
Black-ish. I don't think you are. People like Black-ish. I haven't gotten around to it, but people like it. I think that's becoming a consensus opinion that show's pretty good.
It's really smart. You know what? I would like to assign to you as homework, and I don't...
Black-ish.
I don't know.
Do I have to start at the beginning?
No. I want to assign you a particular episode.
Oh.
Of Black-ish. It aired a few weeks ago. It was the election episode.
Oh boy.
The post-election episode of Black-ish.
Let's nail down which episode that was after the show, instead of figuring it out now. But we can do that for next week.
I'll tweet it out today.
Beautiful.
So that'll be good homework. All right. The other show that sort of popped into the universe this week, the new Sunday night HBO toy showcase is The Young Pope. Where do you stand on The Young Pope? Are you in? Do you worship
it? Do I worship it? Boo.
Sorry.
I am fascinated and a little bit bamboozled, and I don't totally know how to describe the way I feel about it. Now, I have never watched a Paolo Sorrentino film. I don't. Do you know anything about the guy?
No, I'm rushing to Wikipedia as we speak.
I doubt you. He's mostly. He's an Italian director, so most of his stuff is straight up Italian, not crossover much. I think Youth, which was his 2015 movie, was one that got more international attention.
Yeah. This Must Be the Place, El Divo, The Family Friend. Yeah, I haven't seen
any of those. These are all Italian films.
Yeah.
He is clearly a talented filmmaker.
This Must Be the Place is a U.S. film. Sean Penn and Frances McDormand. Yeah. I didn't see it, though.
Oh, my. Look at the theatrical poster is something else for that one.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression that this is music by David Byrne. That fits. I get the impression this is sort of what he does. These sort of elaborately painted and illustrated visual pieces. And it is that, man. It is something else to watch from a color perspective, just some of the scenes where some of the dream sequences, even the... So I think, and now I'm watching on HBO Go for the most part, so I don't know if it's slightly different on TV, but the title sequence, I don't think, is either different every week or they didn't really lock one in till episode 3.
I'm only on episode 2, so I can't speak to that.
I know. But my point is just that, like, even the non-show parts of the show are these stunning visual things that it's impressive. And it's something to watch. The story itself, I'm not sure I've locked in yet. It's a weird narrative about a, you know, young, relatively, he's in his 40s, I think, Pope who wants to return the church to the Dark Ages, kind of, it seems like.
It really seems to me to be unclear what he wants, and without straying too far out of the toy department, he seems almost Trumpian in the way that the things that he wants seems to be focused on himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, that, but also he's a conservative. He's clearly if I've learned one thing about his papal politics, he's a religious conservative.
Right.
And that is an interesting choice because first of all, when you hear the title Young Pope and see Jude Law smoking in the previews, you're like, oh, this Pope's about to wreck stuff.
Yeah, you're thinking rebel Pope, right?
Right. And he is clearly not a rebel Pope.
Yeah.
Or if he is a rebel pope, he's a rebel because he wants to drag the church back into the 1400s. On the other hand,
I'll tell you this: When is this set? I'm not entirely sure about that, to be honest.
Right. I mean, it really could be any time in the last 50 years or so. I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we've seen much in the way of technology that would tell us otherwise.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I do think it's intended to be modern. Though you're right, it could be any time in the last 50 years. From a plot and story perspective, I don't know what's happening really or where it's going, but I'm in for now because it's a spectacle.
I am, to borrow a term from Chidi from The Good Place, I am vexed by this show. Like,
I think that's a very reasonable response to the record.
Like, I agree with you completely that it is really pretty to look at.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I see a lot of virtues beyond that yet. Right now, I would say this would be an amazing show to watch in a bar with the sound off while you're getting wasted. You know what I mean?
I can't totally disagree with that. I'm not 100% sure I'm getting a lot more out of the sound than I would out of strictly the visual.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like, I'm prepared to give you 4 or 5 weeks to lock me into the story when you're doing things that are as creative and interesting visually as they are.
I agree. I think HBO and the visuals sort of buy you some latitude.
Yes. Yeah, but, you know, we turned off vinyl after about 4 weeks, right?
Yeah, I stuck all the way through vinyl.
Oh, you did.
And Westwood. Wow. or Westworld, excuse me.
Yeah, and Westworld paid us off, I think.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. You know, I'm in for now, but anyone who is objecting to a convoluted plot line or a lack of coherence from a narrative perspective, like, I hear you. I hear you, and I don't necessarily have an answer for you.
Yep, not going to argue. So it doesn't feel like a show to me personally yet that I have heard a lot of people rave about.
No. And I think, you know, to the point that we're making, much of the conversation I have heard about it, the people who like it and are advocating for it are saying things like, let it wash over you. You know what I mean? Just sit back and enjoy it. Don't overthink it. And I think that, at least as far as I've gotten, which is three episodes in, I think that is probably the best advice for the moment. And you know, we'll see what happens halfway through. But I'm not sure I'm even doing justice to how, like, impressed and delighted I am with the way it looks. Because it really does look unique and interesting and kind of incredible.
Yes. It's a little stylized. It struck me there was a scene, I think it was in episode 2, with, like, nuns playing soccer.
Yes, and a priest just sort of watching.
Yeah. And like, the nuns were, like, a little too good.
Maybe, like, but they were in their nun gear. I actually thought, like, there are, like, Italian nuns are probably that good at soccer. You know what I mean? Like, I actually felt that scene. Again, you're right. It's stylized, but, like,
yeah. But, I mean, the one nun is doing crazy trick shots, and
yes, one nun does do like a oh my god, I forgot the word for the heel pop,
the rainbow kick.
No. You know, I can do the thing that I'm talking about, yeah, where you put it on the back of your heel and pop it over your head from behind you. Anyway,
yeah, are you doing that in a game against a defender? Like, this lady was in a dress and a
habit? Never in my life. No. Yeah. But I can do it in an empty field.
And every shot is like hitting the upper 90. Like, the keepers are dying.
It opens with a one-handed nun blasting a penalty kick into the upper left-hand corner of the net. I agree. It's a little over the top.
If you've watched the Women's World Cup, you would, you know, the Italian women are not particularly good at football, if you will. So,
wow. Taking it right to the street.
Sorry. You know, I don't think there's a ton of women, like, over there, you know, like, I get it. Like, they got soccer country. They're great. But, well, I'm not sure the women are participating in the same way. You know what I mean?
Maybe that's because they're not getting enough nuns involved.
It's true. I don't know. All right. You know, we can do X's and O's on nun soccer in a future episodes of this program.
Yeah, an episode that's not supposed to be a short version. Yeah,
that's
okay,
right.
Sounds good.
Fine. All right.
But I think, yeah, we're both at a point where, like, we'll watch this because it's entertaining and it's a spectacle worth seeing for the moment.
Yeah. And right now there's a little bit of holes in the schedule. If this were April, when, like, Americans and Leftovers and three or four more other things are dropping, it'd be...
Or anything I might watch.
Better Call Saul. You know what I mean? Like,
ooh,
yeah. It's going to be big. That's going to be a busy
time. I almost
forgot
about that one.
Can't wait for Better Call Saul. Gus Fring's going to be in this season.
I've heard that. I am a Gus Fring fan.
Yeah, it's going to be good times. All right, so let's jump over to the world of movies. We saw a couple of Oscar noms. Should we run through the Oscar noms, or do you want to talk about the movies that we saw?
Well, I have seen everything that I have been sent by the Screen Actors Guild. Oh,
that's right, Mr. SAG.
I'm voting in the SAG Awards this week, and I've seen everything they sent me except Manchester by the Sea. They did not send me, of the Best Picture nominees, they did not send me Hacksaw Ridge or Hell or High Water. Now, I don't know, actually. I haven't looked at the actual SAG Award nominations. I've just been watching everything I can.
So you haven't voted yet? You know,
no, voting is due Friday, so I'll do it tomorrow night, probably. But I will say, you know, that means of the 3, 6, 9 Best Picture nominees, I think I've seen 7 of them. 6 of them. I've seen 6 of the 9. And... I got to tell you, there is not a movie this year that I think is a great Best Picture choice.
Hmm. All right.
I think there are great movies. I know the two. I know my top two, and I just have to pick between them. But I don't know. I think the Oscar nominations this year are sort of a story about what the movie business is, and they're just I don't know.
How bankrupt Hollywood sort of is?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, did you buy into, because I know you're a fan of this movie, did you buy into, there was a lot of, hey, Deadpool is going to get a Best Picture nomination talk coming into this.
I think it could have.
Really?
I think Deadpool's a much better movie than La La Land. Like, much better.
Wow.
I think Deadpool's a better movie than Arrival.
I haven't seen La La Land, I can't comment. But I have seen Arrival, and I would say that is preposterous.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Why is it preposterous? Just because Deadpool is funny and they swear a lot?
No, I'm not against funny and swearing a lot. I just, well, like,
what is it about Arrival that made it so great? Because to me, Arrival was a movie that was entertaining and thought provoking and falls apart completely upon the slightest scrutiny. Did we talk about this?
We did discuss Arrival at length. Yeah. I don't disagree with any of that. I thought Deadpool was a mildly entertaining action
really
movie. Yeah.
Oh, well, I think your superhero fatigue is playing into
no,
this a little bit.
No, honestly, I saw the whole thing. I enjoyed it more than most of those movies, but there's nothing about that movie that said it was great. I was like, this is refreshing and has a neat attitude. That's
all
as
right,
far
well,
as I'd get.
What makes a great movie?
What makes a great movie?
Yeah.
A great movie makes you, like, feel something, for starters.
Does it have to? Is that the goal of Deadpool?
That's well executed? Yeah, I think that's the goal of any story, isn't it? That make you feel something?
Well, I think the goal of Deadpool is to make you feel entertained and make you laugh.
But it's not like it's like a genius comedy. Like, Reynolds has some funny lines.
I think you're selling it a little short.
Mm.
I think you know, you have to accept that it's a movie produced within the rubric of comic books.
Sure.
I think
you're essentially saying is kind of limiting, right?
It is kind of limiting, and I think within that the creators of that movie did so many fun and interesting things within that and subverted the genre just enough to not drive people like you nuts. People with superhero fatigue, and I think, you know, like, the goal of a comedy is to be funny and entertaining and enjoyable, and I think if you're gonna be a rival, you're taking on more than that, and you should be held to the standards that you've chosen to attempt.
Yeah,
like,
I thought Arrival was just as successful as at what it was trying to accomplish as Deadpool was.
I don't agree with that, but putting that aside, I think, you know, how many – you're allowed to have 10, right?
You are allowed to have 10. And honestly, this list should be 7 because the two movies that – you know, Hacksaw Ridge and Hell or High Water have no chance to win.
Well, you know, I haven't seen Hell or High Water, but I actually heard really good things about it.
I've heard it's good, but they have no chance to win, right? I think we can agree with that.
No, you're right. But my point is just, like, essentially Deadpool is not nominated for Best Picture in favor of nothing. That's my point.
Yeah, I think,
like, and I don't understand. Here, to me, the only reason it's not in that the only reason it's not considered just as good a movie as these others is because it's a comedy with swearing.
I think you're getting into voting procedures, but I believe to get a Best Picture nomination, you need to be listed as the Best Picture, like the number one choice on a certain number of ballots. And I just don't know that there are that many people that would say Deadpool was the single best picture, even if they had it in their top 5.
Fair.
You know what I mean?
I think that's fair.
And that's why it's not in this group.
And I don't think it's the best movie of the year. Yeah. I the two movies that I am intended to choose from, which I'm sure I'll mention shortly, were clearly the two best movies of the year. Although, again, I've not seen Manchester by the Sea, and I may not see it. But I do think it was top 5. I think Deadpool was top 5 of the year, and I really believe, you know, voting procedures aside, that philosophically the reason it's not nominated is because people don't want to believe that comedies are can be great movies.
I really think it's that simple. Like, I've long been a proponent of Oscars should recognize comedy more, and I'm not against that. I mean, you know, obviously I'm not in the Academy. I just don't. First of all, I think Deadpool is an action movie that has some laughs. It's like it's a comedy in the way that the Matt Damon movie was.
It's an action comedy.
So,
oh, that's not true. It's right. Much funnier than The Martian.
It is funnier than The Martian, but The Martian was also not a comedy. It was an action movie that had jokes.
I think Deadpool is an action comedy. It's not just an action movie with jokes. It's a comedy with action. I would say more than the reverse.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it has big action scenes, but think of how much of that movie is just well-written funny dialogue. It really is.
Man, I am. All right. You like Deadpool more than I did. I'll just put it that way.
I mean, part of this is I love Deadpool. Yeah. And part of this is just we disagree about that one movie. But I do think there's this, whether or not it's the main reason Deadpool wasn't nominated, that bias against comedy exists. And I think it's silly and sillier with each passing year that there are not these majestic best picture. Because look, I may hate Titanic, and boy do I, let me tell you, but at least it has a majesty in the best picture argument that I can understand what people got behind.
Right. And it has that sort of like populist. By the way, I've never seen Titanic, and I never will.
Great work. That is excellent work by you. I'm proud to do a podcast with a man who can say that. But to me, La La Land is Titanic without the boat. It's just not good. Sorry.
All right.
And all this celebration of it because a couple people that can't sing spend an hour and 40 minutes singing to each other. Keep it. Honestly, this is a mediocre movie.
But we can agree, right, in terms of when we're talking about who's going to win, that La La Land and Moonlight are the prime contenders for Best Picture, right?
Yeah, and if La La Land beats Moonlight, I'm not sure I'm ever watching an Academy Awards again.
Well,
it boils my blood thinking about it.
I would think as a SAG member that you would get that, that these awards often go to movies about the majesty of movies, right?
I mean, when you say get, I recognize that.
Yeah.
I don't accept or understand it.
I was mostly just needling you because you're in SAC.
I know. But look, here's the thing, man. Like, it doesn't even really celebrate the majesty of LA. Like, God, if you had seen this, we could trash it. I know you probably won't because you already don't even like good musicals, and this is not a good musical. It's not.
I'm going to see it, though.
The songs are fine. The singing is mediocre at best. The plot is loosely thrown together and meaningless. Like, I like overrated things drive me absolutely batty. So I'm reacting more negatively than this movie strictly deserves on its own merits. It's a fine movie. It's watchable. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are delightful on screen. I could watch both of them.
Right. Are you against the Emma Stone Best Actress freight train that seems to be rolling through? That seems to be the one sort of almost unanimous opinion about the movie.
Am I against Emma Stone? Certainly not. Did I think she was bad? Not at all. But to give someone Best Actress for a film where they sing half the time and they're just not that good at singing. I watched Jackie, and Natalie Portman is stunning.
Her not being that good at singing, though, isn't that, like, a lot of people feel that's essential to the movie, that that's part of the point. I haven't seen the movie, so I'm not going to,
That doesn't make any sense. Like, just think about that on its face. It's a musical. It's not a musical about how she's an untalented singer. It's a musical about an actress.
I don't know what it's about.
But this is my point. A musical, it'd be one thing if this was a story about a woman whose singing was just not that great. It's a story about an actress. The singing is totally irrelevant to the story, except that this is a musical, so everyone starts singing randomly for no reason. Okay? If you're just going to start singing randomly for no reason, you should be decent. I love Emma Stone. It's not that her acting is not great. Her acting is great. She's incredibly engaging. but she's just an actress playing an actress who happens to sing because it's a musical. I don't understand why her not singing well would be key to that. That doesn't make any sense to me.
All right.
And,
well,
and I have not seen the other three. So the only two actresses whose movies I saw in the nominations, because the other nominations are Isabelle Huppert for Elle, didn't see it. Ruth Negga for Loving, which I heard was incredible, and I love her, so I would like to see that.
And Meryl Streep for being Meryl Streep.
Exactly. She gets nominated every year.
Because it's Meryl Streep.
To me, I mean, I'm essentially, like, I'll try to see more before the Oscars, but between Natalie Portman and Emma Stone, it's not close. Natalie Portman became Jackie Onassis. Natalie Portman's performance was so convincing and sort of haunting that I spent 30 minutes watching Jackie O footage afterwards just to compare and contrast and think about it. And I thought she gave this haunting, incredible performance that, like, Emma Stone just didn't have that job to do. I don't understand it. I really don't. I don't understand the love affair with La La Land at all.
I feel like you may be giving away your SAG award ballot here, but let's jump.
I'm happy to give away. I was planning to tweet it out anyway.
Let's jump off of La La Land here for a second. Yeah. A, because I haven't seen it, so I really have not that much to add. And B, because I actually went to the movies to see some Oscar contenders, and we haven't talked about them at all yet. I just want to add, before we kind of jump out of Best Picture, to me, the missing movie here is not Deadpool. It's OJ Made in America, which is nominated for documentary, but to me is unquestionably one of the 10 best films of the year.
I think you're probably right, but given the fact that it wasn't really a film per se, and the fact that
there have been documentaries nominated for Best Picture before.
But probably not six-hour television documentaries.
Maybe. But, I mean, look, it's...
I mean, it's kind of unfair to have a documentary that's given 6 hours to make its case, to make that a best picture compared to, you know, 90-minute narrative film.
I guess, but isn't the fact that it's 6 hours, like, isn't there a separate challenge of you have to be interesting for 6 hours?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, I think you're probably right.
I think it's seven and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably was the best film of the year, and it'll win documentary feature, but I'm not upset that it's not nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's Highway Robbery, but I think it should have been in there, and it might be the Best Picture of this year.
It might be. I will say Moonlight, to me, was thoughtful and well-made and tremendously acted and very, very good, and Hidden Figures was a spectacular achievement in joyous retelling of important history that we did not know.
Agreed. Hidden Figures is one of the movies I saw, and it's hard not to love it, I feel like.
It's so wonderful. And the only reason, you know, Moonlight is taking on more from a filmmaking perspective in some ways, and that's why I'm sort of torn between the two from a Best Picture standpoint. But in terms of enjoyable movie-going experience, beautifully done, well shot, well acted, well written, just like everything that a movie is supposed to be, Hidden Figures is an absolute home run. And so I think ultimately that is probably where I'm
going to
go.
Interesting. And I do think that there's going to be, you know, when you look at the voting politics of something like the Oscars, right, there's going to be at some point a groundswell of, hey, maybe we should award a movie that, you know, people actually went to see. You know, I think Hidden Figures may pick up that vote. So could be a movie I could see sort of breaking into this La La Land Moonlight sort of dichotomy that we've seen.
I don't want to belabor La La Land any more than I already have.
Yes, please don't.
But that's the thing. What La La Land doesn't even have any goals besides to entertain. And Hidden Figures, with much loftier goals and much bigger accomplishments, is more entertaining. So, like, the idea that La La Land would win Best Picture makes me angrier than I can describe in words.
I can tell. What did you think of Fences? Did you see Fences?
Fences is like an acting class.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a play shot on video.
It is. Yeah. It's nothing more than a play. And I think, you know, I was thinking about that a lot as I watched it, because I heard that as a sort of criticism. And so I think I went in thinking of it as a negative, as like, well, if you just want to stage a play, you might as well have put a camera on a tripod and done this on the stage and then put that out. And in a way, I think even after watching Fences and enjoying it, that's somewhat true. It's really just an outdoors version of a play. They shot it in outdoors locations, but there's only three or four locations. It's essentially just conversations between some of the most talented actors we have ever seen. And so, first of all, that part is incredible. I mean, Denzel and Viola Davis are... God, I cried a lot during this movie.
Yeah, I just... You know, Denzel's doing... This is the play thing for me is a little bit... Denzel is literally doing that. I'm in a theater projecting to the back of the house acting on film.
But you know
I had a tough time with that.
See, I thought I would have a tougher time, but as I got into the middle of it, I started feeling like I wouldn't have wanted it the other way.
Hmm.
I started feeling like what I was getting from Denzel and Viola Davis really is the star to me.
Yeah, and
she's so incredible.
I understand that the people who the studio or whatever submitted her as best supporting actress. Because they thought she that's the way to get her the win. But that's a lead role.
It's a shame.
And she should be up in the lead role category, right?
And I would vote for her.
Yeah, she was the rock of that movie, for sure.
She's in every scene. She's clearly the lead. She's more of a lead than Denzel in that movie.
Yeah.
And she's incredible. I mean, her performance is so incredible. The emotions... From a range of emotions perspective, from the job of that character to sort of endure what she endures and come out the other side the way she does in the final scene, it's heartbreaking and difficult. And there's layers to it. It's an incredible acting performance, and she deserves the Best Actress award for it. And she was better than any of the actresses I saw in a leading role. And I'm kind of disappointed because I wanted to vote for Octavia Spencer for Hidden Figures for supporting. But the movie itself, it is just a play. But the more I watched it, the more I felt like that was the right treatment of it. And that I'm not sure, even if they had made it more theatrical and filmic, I'm not sure I would have gotten anything out of that. Because to me, it was a movie about performances. And it's really, you know, who else deserves a ton of credit is... I don't know how to pronounce his name since he changed it, but Michael T. Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's easy to be lampoonable or laughable as a disabled character, and I thought he was tremendous.
I thought the kid was great. There really were no bad performances in the movie.
There were no bad performances, but to me, Viola Davis and... I mean, Denzel is Denzel. He's incredible, but... But Viola Davis and Michael T. Williamson, however you say it, I thought were both standouts.
I don't mind. Like, I don't – again, like, I don't mind the movie being shot as a play or just sort of – you know what I mean? Like you know, Glengarry Glen Ross is kind of the same way. You know, like, uh-huh. you can make a great movie that has that. I just don't – I just didn't need the – I'm projecting to the back of the house, Denzel, you know?
I hear you. It was a loud performance from like not just vocally, but it was everything was loud. It was loud. It was like they can't see my facial expression, so my body has to express these things. It was all of that. It was all theater acting, and he directed it. So you know he did that on purpose. I thought the words and the. I think the play is good enough that worked for me.
All right, fair enough.
Now it's not a great film.
It's also a serious bummer.
Real bummer.
Yeah.
But it is. But I would say it's a good movie with great acting, and there's something to be said for that.
Agreed.
And you know what? Even if we put Denzel aside, I would have spent the two hours and 15 minutes just to watch Viola Davis because. It was a masterclass. I mean, this has been said. I'm not breaking any new ground, but like that woman is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, she's incredible. She made me cry repeatedly.
I'd recommend you go see it. And the fact that she you know needs to do an ABC series to you know keep working and cash paychecks is insane.
It's a crime.
It's insane. We should talk about her like we talk about Meryl Streep and, at this point, frankly.
I was thinking about that because was it – what was I watching where they name-dropped Meryl Streep? Oh, my God. Last night, I went with my coworker Rod Brooks to an SF Sketchfest event that was the 30th anniversary of the Hollywood Shuffle.
Oh, I love Hollywood Shuffle.
And Keenan Ivory Wayans and Robert Townsend were there for a Q&A. It was an awesome, awesome event. And that movie is a true work of genius 20 years before its time. And in that movie, 30 years ago, when they name drop, in a joking fashion, when they name drop famous award-winning actors, Robert Townsend is like, you know, like Dustin Hoffman or De Niro or Pacino or Meryl Streep. 30 years ago,
yeah,
she was already Meryl Streep, and we're still nominating her every year. But Viola Davis has to fight and scratch and claw to get involved. It's a shame. It's a goddamn shame.
By the way, not to belabor this point, I'm not at all saying that Meryl Streep isn't great. She really is.
And she's excellent.
That speech at the Golden Globes was,
good for her.
Fantastic. I just don't know that we have to pencil her in every time she makes a movie.
That's
all
I'm
saying.
Not.
And like,
we certainly do.
I mean, Florence Foster Jenkins. Yeah, like, really? Really, Oscars? Yeah, right. That's all
it's
I'm
like
saying.
This. It's not even Oscars so white. It's just Oscars so Meryl.
Yeah, that's what Oscars so Meryl. Like
every year, Oscar so Meryl every freaking year.
You're great. You're a national treasure, and like
he is.
Yeah, like no issue, but not every year, maybe. All right. So on that note, let's get out of here for today. Next week is week before the Super Bowl. I think we ought to do prop bets like we did last time.
Hell yeah! Can I just throw a couple things out there?
Okay.
On the movie front, before we step away, I already said Moonlight and Hidden Figures are my top two films of the year. I would like to throw out that Lion, which is on that Best Picture list, I think was not a great movie, but it was a really good performance from Dev Patel, and it's a movie worth watching. It's a interesting, true story that probably deserves more credit than it has gotten. Certainly deserves more eyes than it has gotten.
Is that the one Nicole Kidman is in as well, or is that what's her movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, that is Nicole Kidman, and she's good. I also just feel like I have to say I am not at all okay with the reclamation of Mel Gibson. I think I said this to you off air, right?
Oh,
I didn't say
yeah, I believe that was
yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not okay with it. He doesn't deserve to be nominated. He doesn't deserve to be making movies. And it's a damn shame that even in Hollywood, where I think people would tell you liberalism is reigning arguably to a damaging degree, that a guy like Mel Gibson is given chance after chance to do unimportant, mediocre work, despite the fact that he's a human train wreck who doesn't deserve it.
That's a strong statement. I didn't see the movie. So I'm not going to comment on that, but I'll say Mel Gibson is gross. I'll add that.
He's gross. Gross, and he shouldn't. This rush to re-embrace him. Oh, it's been 3 years since he said virulently sexist, anti-Semitic things. Let's bring him back into the fold. No, F that.
I'll throw a counterpoint out there, though, in the Roman Polanski. So,
well, but Roman Polanski's good.
Okay. But he's a child rapist. So, that's the way Oscar goes. They're into reclamation progress.
I'm not defending Roman Polanski. He doesn't deserve defense. He probably shouldn't be allowed back in either. But that's not, that doesn't do anything for me to soften the blow of Mel Gibson. That guy sucks. And he should be on the outside.
All right. I'm going to try to go see some of these movies I haven't seen yet. Probably, hopefully, I'll get to either Manchester of the Sea or La La Land or Lion this weekend.
I would like to hear your perspective on La La Land, although I'm quite certain you won't love it.
Yeah, I'm already dreading it. So I think we know where this is all going to head, right? So
That's how I'm feeling about Manchester by the Sea. By the way, it's like not quite, because I believe it's good. I just don't want to sit through it.
Yeah, understood. And I may need, I probably won't see that one next because the last one I saw is Fences, and I maybe just need something that's a little bit
that's
of a breather.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we'll see. Anything else you want to assign? We got Blackish this week. Anything else?
Yeah, you know, let's just say get to as many of those best pictures as you can. Maybe we should both try to watch Hell or High Water because, again, I heard really good things about that.
Yeah.
You don't sound excited.
Yeah, Westerns.
No, I don't love Westerns either. I mean, there's a reason I haven't seen it, but I'm a Jeff Bridges fan, and again, people keep saying it, this is not your average Western. So, yeah. You know, maybe we should listen to people.
We will listen to people. All right, so that's it for this week. Excited about next week's show. Good to be back with you, and say that thing.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.